I will crucify every dog of a Christian among them. Or maybe I just burn them with slow fires. What you think?
I'm Justin Sadler, film critic with the Mountain Express.
And I'm Ken Hankey, the other film critic for the Mountain Express.
We are Elitist Bastards.
Last I checked, yes.
Uh-huh. We've been to the movies.
Yes, and we're currently at...
the Carolina Asheville.
In the Cinema Lounge. Mm-hmm.
And...
we're going to...
yes.
Tell you...
what we've seen.
What we've heard. And what we're dreading.
Which one should we start with? Should we start with Ondine? That one was... Since you enjoyed that one.
I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed The Kids Are All Right. So
okay. Let's start with those. We'll work our way down.
Oh, we're going to work our way down mm-hmm. to... are you going to get worked up about how bad...
maybe.
Oh, okay. I'm going to start poking him and see if I can get him to get all mean.
Good luck. Anyway, Ondine...
well, Ondine,
what's your professional opinion?
My professional opinion of Ondine. My professional opinion.
Yes.
My professional opinion of Ondine.
You're a professional, aren't you?
I haven't gotten my paycheck yet this month, so I'm not sure. I really liked Ondine, which kind of surprised me in a way, because it didn't sound all that interesting to me. A story about a man who fishes a woman out of the ocean. And the question being whether or not she is a Selkie, which is a sort of a seal woman, didn't really appeal to me very much, and I had slogged my way through part of John Sayles' The Secret of Roan Inish, which has a similar plot line. And you'll notice that I use the phrase partway through, which means that I didn't ever finish that. But it was a Neil Jordan picture, and that was working in his favor, and it's very much a Neil Jordan picture. And
what does that mean exactly?
Well, that means the characters are all very flawed. Mm-hmm. It's very full of the atmosphere of the place, in this case the place being the little town in Ireland that Jordan actually lives in.
Right.
It's got a sense of humor about itself. It's quirky without seeming to be particularly forced. And... it's kind of generous in spirit. And it means that Stephen Ray is going to show up somewhere during the course
right.
of the film.
Well, he's in the trailer. Even.
Yeah, I think he is. So, yeah. So I mean, it's a nice little film with an ending that almost a week later I'm still trying to figure out exactly how I feel about. And I can't say much more about the trailer, about the ending without... giving away too much, yeah. But the ending is definitely a source of discontent with some people and is a little bit on the controversial side. But given that much of the overall film seems to be about kind of the idea that adults are more in need of fairy stories than the children that they're telling them to are, I'm not real sure how you can have another kind of ending than the one that's on here and have the film work. So I'm going to side with Jordan. I figure he probably knows more than his detractors.
And the other film you liked this week?
The other film I liked this week was The Kids Are All Right, which I perhaps didn't like quite as much as I was supposed to, because I think I was supposed to think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it's probably the greatest thing since bread in a bag. You know, slicing didn't get quite that far. It's a good film. It's a warm film. It's a funny film. It's a subversive film in that it deals with a lesbian couple and their two children, both of whom are the product of artificial insemination, both by the same man who turns out to be Mark Ruffalo. But what's subversive is that it's done pretty much in a typical sitcom style. And as a result, it makes the whole thing look so normal that you almost don't even think about the gender issue with the couple, to a point where it's so natural that it isn't really an issue, and you realize that it's couple issues going on here, not lesbian issues or gay issues. And I think that's very clever of it. And it's also its own prison, because it means that the film has to be structured like a sitcom, and as a result, satisfying though it is, there's almost nothing that happens in it that you can't figure out is going to happen the minute the scene starts.
Do you think that's part of the reason why it's
I think that's part of the reason why it's so popular, yes. It's very comfortable to people. It doesn't push them out of, you know, I mean, you know how almost everything's going to play out. But the acting is excellent. Julianne Moore, Annette Bening, the kids are both great in it. Mark Ruffalo is extremely good. So, I mean, it's definitely a film to be seen.
David Bowie songs.
David Bowie songs, yes. No Who song. I can answer that question now. The Who song does not appear in the film. There's a precedent for that. The Who song does not appear in the film on The Who called The Kids Are All Right. So go and figure that one out.
Get back to us.
But
I'm just gonna say it. Charlie St. Cloud.
What about Charlie St. Cloud?
Did it warm the cockles of your icy
No,
heart?
It stayed away from my cockles altogether.
Okay. You mean America's heartthrob, Zac Efron?
Well, that's one of the whole problems with it. I mean, there's several whole problems.
Okay.
There's a lot of whole problems.
It sounds like there's also partial problems.
There are partial problems, too.
Right.
If you've seen the poster with Zach looking all dreamy,
uh-huh.
That's pretty much how he plays the entire film. He looks dreamy.
Is there anything else that they would be able to market this movie on other than...
Well, unless
the whole thing seems really creepy, and not in a good kind of way.
Well, unless you really think that some guy teaching his little brother how to play baseball, or more correctly, teaching the ghost of his little brother
right.
how to play baseball for... Well, I'm trying to think how long it goes on. It goes on forever that he's been doing this, and the kid gets no better. Of course, the kid gets no older either, because he's like dead. This is not a happening story. And then when he falls in love and has to sort of make a choice between moving ahead with his life or hanging out with his dead brother, it doesn't get much better, despite the fact that they bring in a twist, which is...
Are you going to give it away?
No.
No.
But if you've seen more than half a dozen movies in your life, you'll probably figure it out, because there's this weird jump that the film makes. And it's kind of like, well, how did, of course. It's harmless. It's slightly tedious. It's bathed in a soft, glowing, luminous haze. Because they have very carefully worked it out so that the meetings between the two brothers always occur at sunset, because the promise was that they would meet at Sunset Cannon, which they live in a little town that's so picturesque they fire a cannon off every day at sunset.
Seems sort of rednecky, but
this is New England. That's
okay.
Not
okay.
It's more like
they have rednecks in New England.
I'm sure they have rednecks in New England. I've seen some of them. They say things like my favorite
cannon.
Yeah, well, they say things like my favorite is Sausalito. Or they're Fred Gwynn in Pet Cemetery.
Okay, so is the twist... I was going to ask if the dead brother, the twist...
No, the dead brother has nothing to do with the twist.
Oh, he's not Rosebud?
No, he's not Rosebud, okay. And despite the fact that he looks like he will grow up to be Steve Zahn, this unfortunate child does not turn out to be Steve
what
Zahn.
A twist
now, that would
be.
Have been a good twist.
Well,
but no, it's...
There's reasons they don't pay us to make movies. Because we would have...
I would have had him turn into Steve Zahn, and that would have just ruined the whole...
Where's
gooey
Steve
premise, I guess.
Yes.
So, in any case,
Are you saying Steve Zahn is not romantic? the visage of
Steve No, Zahn. I don't believe that I have ever looked at Steve Zahn and gone, wow, what a heartthrob. That has not occurred to me.
Well.
No.
It's a pity. I don't know why, but I'm sure it is.
I sat through a film once with Ken Russell, who he lost. He felt the film lost credibility the minute that Jennifer Aniston slept with Steve Zahn. It's like, this is going to happen. So, what cinematic delights did you see, young Justin?
Well, one of them was Dinner for Schmucks, the new Paul Rudd, Steve Carell opus, which I've never seen the French film. That it was, it's a remake of the 12-year-old French film that it's a remake of. But, and I'm not a huge Paul Rudd fan. I occasionally like Steve Carell. I think I like him more than I don't normally. And I was, I don't want to say pleasantly surprised, but I was pleased.
You were pleasantly not appalled.
Yes.
Okay. That's a notch down from surprise.
Yeah. It's amazing to find a movie in this day and age that does not have a fart joke in it. I think that's something.
I really believe that you can be fined for that.
Well, I'm sure they put out a pretty penny for.
I'm sure they
not
did.
Putting in a fart joke.
There's no flatulence in this movie. Yeah. Wow, 100,000 right there.
It still is kind of a what you would call a dumb movie because Steve Carell's character is this big idiot, and his whole purpose in the film is to make Paul Rudd's life a living hell. So he's basically just...
In the main, I don't see that that's a particularly bad ambition.
No, no. Just, yeah, I mean, Paul Rudd needs a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I think. And so the basic premise is that Paul Rudd is this businessman, he's ladder climbing, and he gets invited to this dinner by his boss where they have to bring an idiot. And whoever brings the biggest idiot, their idiot gets a trophy. And I guess they get some sort of social standing.
Their idiot gets a trophy.
Yes, as most outstanding person. And...
Biggest maroon.
Yeah, kind of, yes. So Paul Rudd almost runs over Steve Carell. Actually, he does run him over. And he meets this idiot who makes... He taxidermies mice and puts them in little dioramas. Makes... remakes works of art with these dead
mice.
Yeah,
I saw that there was a Last Supper with mice in one of the stills.
Yes, they carry around the Jesus mouse for a little bit in the movie. And...
Now, I think you should explain, because you had to explain it to me, because I was alarmed at first.
Yes.
That Steve Carell's character, like, kills these mice and then does this. So I think you should explain that
he finds these dead mice. He finds them in the street and things like that. And overall, the movie...
I mean, there's something kind of creepy about the idea that, like, he catches mice and gasses them. And then,
he's a very sweet-natured guy, which is why the movie works more than it doesn't. I wouldn't say this is a great movie. I didn't feel like I wasted my time with it to a certain extent. Mostly because Carell's character is... He's just really lonely. If I knew this guy and he was following me around constantly, I would hate him. But on screen, it's sort of... You get to understand why he's so... clingy and bumbling and so forth, and that's kind of why it works. There's never really...
But do you think you will take this lesson and apply it to your own life?
Yes. I take all lessons from all movies.
No. In other words, the next time that you are followed around by a clingy, bumbling person,
but
you're
might,
going to take
no, but I can understand,
home with you.
But I can understand why maybe he's bumbling and stupid. Possibly, I don't know.
Okay.
But nevertheless.
Speaking of bungling and stupid,
you're not
finished with the
schmucks? No, this is something I forgot to put in my review. And I feel like I should at least bring it up now. It's called Dinner for Schmucks. You don't actually get to see this dinner until the third act. This is a 2-hour movie, which is way too long for comedy. And it takes forever to get to this dinner. And so... I've heard some people complain about this. I would complain about this because I'm sitting there an hour and a half into the movie,
going,
checking my
eat?
Watch. Like, is there a dinner at some point for schmucks? Is what they have the same ring, I guess. But that's the movie. And it probably did help that I watched it after I watched Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore.
Yes, you get the whole title.
3D.
In 3D.
Yes. Which is a sequel to a 9-year-old movie that no one remembers. That I looked up on Box Office Mojo and apparently made a decent amount of money for a piece of crap. I mean, tons
never
of pieces of crap.
Never underestimate the fascination of the American public with talking animals.
Yes. And this is...
How many years was Mr. Ed on TV, for God's sake?
I don't know.
How many Francis the Talking Mule movie did they make, you know?
I don't know how many.
It was sad. I don't remember. There are too many.
Okay.
One was too
many.
How
many have you seen?
At least three, maybe four.
Okay.
I have never seen...
Why have you watched four of those?
Because they used to show them. They brought the... Back in the olden days,
right.
You know, when we were still using stone tablets,
uh-huh.
Rather than... We didn't have VCRs, and we only had, like, three television stations. And they brought movies back into theaters,
uh-huh.
And they brought things in especially for kids on Saturday afternoons. So as a result, I got to see most of the Martin and Lewis films, most of the Francis Talking Mule films, and God save me, most of the Ma and Pa Kettle pictures. It wasn't entirely by choice. For 25 cents, your parents could get rid of you for over four
uh-huh.
hours. By dropping you off downtown.
Well, you can do that now.
It was a bargain. Yeah. But.
Anyway.
Yes.
So it's a talking animal movie.
This
that's
is true.
Pretty much. It's talking animal movie by way of tons of pop culture references and the worst pop music imaginable. And
I can imagine
Chris O'Donnell's in it for some reason. I forgot he was alive. I guess that's why he's in it.
Well,
in case
I guess
anybody
it reminds
was worried.
You of it. Yeah.
Yes. So, it's talking animals, making animal puns, animal jokes. So,
are you saying you do not recommend this film?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the gist of it. This Thursday,
we have Jacques Tourneur's Night of the Demon,
yes.
Which you might know as Curse of the Demon,
mm-hmm.
starring Dana Andrews, Peggy Cummins, and the amazing Niall McGuinness as the evil Dr. Carswell.
Yes. And would you like to explain the difference between the two?
Yes.
Yes.
The film was made as Night of the Demon in Britain with largely American money. Which is why Dana Andrews is in the film, because he had market value in the U.S.
Is it mostly American actors? Or am I
no, it's just mostly American money.
Okay.
It's mostly Brit actors, but they've
okay.
got Dana Andrews
okay.
for this, the sole purpose of selling it in the States.
Right.
Well, somebody decided that calling it Curse of the Demon would be scarier than calling it Night of the Demon.
I read something different on Wikipedia.
And what did you read?
They didn't want it confused with Night of the Iguana.
That's nonsense. It's 7 years before Night of the Iguana.
Okay, well...
So Wikipedia is just pounding
okay.
sand, as usual.
That's why I mentioned
okay.
Wikipedia.
So it became Curse of the Demon, and they cut 12 minutes out of it.
Okay.
Bringing it down from 95 to 83 minutes... Which makes it much more comfortable on a double bill. And even in the 83-minute version, it was a good film. In the 95-minute version, it's an excellent film. It may, in fact, be my favorite horror film.
Right, and you've told me it's your favorite straight horror
film. Yeah, horror
pure.
Film that is nothing but a horror film. I mean, Bride of Frankenstein, The Black Cat, these are all better films, but they completely transcend genre to become just great films, not
okay.
great horror films.
Okay.
So...
It's got a good demon in it.
It's got a good demon.
I like the noise it makes when it
oh, yes.
shows up.
And it's got one of my favorite horror movie scores on it, which unfortunately in written form is lost. And someone did make a suite out of it at one point by listening to the music and figuring out the notes, but this never seems to work out quite the same.
Okay.
So until somebody finds the actual sheet music, which so much of that is lost, it's unlikely that we'll ever get a really good recording of the soundtrack other than the one on the film.
And next Tuesday,
yes,
for the actual Film Society.
Next Tuesday, the
actual. But you're very perturbed about this.
Film Society, and I'm not perturbed about it.
You're angry, you're seething right now.
I'm not seething.
You have your hands around my neck.
Well, is that what I had a hold of? No, I'm not angry. It's just the fact that you're the one that picked Robert Altman's Shortcuts,
yes,
and then I'm the one who had to review it, which means that I'm going to sit through this 3-hour-plus movie twice.
Well,
and it was your choice.
Do you like the film?
It's a wonderful film. It's okay. A terrific film, especially if you like Altman films.
Okay.
I know our illuminated producer is sitting there making rude gestures, which I'm assuming are directed at the late Mr. Altman and not at me. I can make rude gestures back.
I'll be honest, I did not know it was 3 hours. I've never seen this film. The reason I was like, hey, let's show this, is because I wanted an excuse to watch it. I'll admit that many of these screenings we do are completely self-indulgent and a means for...
As long as they are, as long as they are entertaining and in some way enlighten or educate or broaden the viewers, I don't care if you've indulged yourself.
Okay.
But the next time you pick something that's over 3 hours long, you're reviewing.
Or you
it.
Could just say, hey, this is 3 hours long. Maybe we could reconsider.
No,
this.
I think the next time you
you're
pick
just
something
to tell.
You're, no, I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to say, okay, you're reviewing it.
Okay.
But no, I think it is a pretty terrific
and
film.
I'm a Raymond Carver fan. I don't think you're familiar with
I
his
have never
writing.
Read Carver,
okay.
So.
Which is most of the reason I wanted to see this. I'm a fan of his.
Well,
so
you can tell me how it stacks up against his writing.
I will. Definitely. What's opening?
We have to talk about the movies that are opening this week. It's sort of grim.
Well, Ondine, which you already talked about.
Ondine is opening, and that's not grim at all.
Okay, but let's start with what I'm watching.
Yes, let's start with what Justin is watching, because
Step
he's the
3D.
Expert.
Well, no, I'm not. You make it sound like I'm an expert on Step Up, which is not true. I'm an expert on these bad dance movies that they keep putting out because you keep making me watch them.
However, prior to your existence in my life, or at least in my life as a critic, I had to sit through You Got Served. So I have no sympathy. And aside from which, you've seen a Step Up movie, and it's the same sort of logic. But this is the same sort of logic that you use on me every time there's a Tyler Perry movie.
No, it's not the same type of logic. The logic for Tyler Perry is that I want you to be a completist.
The logic for Tyler Perry is that you are a sadist.
Yes, that too.
Okay.
That was the other part of it.
Okay. Anyway, let's...
I'm pretty sure you could watch Step Up 3D and pretty much pick up what's going on.
I would not want to do the film the disservice.
I'm sure you would not.
It needs all the help it can get.
It wants to do you the disservice, so I don't see why you should spare
well,
anything.
Well, yeah, you've got a point there, I suppose. And then it's going to get to do you the disservice.
Yes.
But I'm stuck with a Will Ferrell movie as my option. We were speaking of the karmic burden that I have, which is sitting through the other guys.
Yes.
Now this is...
It's Mark Wahlberg's in it too.
Yeah, no, but it's Will Ferrell with the guy who gave you Anchorman and Step Brothers.
I know.
So this is not, and Talladega Nights.
Wow.
And while I was mildly amused by Anchorman, I really pretty much hated the other two.
We'll see if Mark Wahlberg and Samuel L. Jackson can possibly offset.
I'm hoping. You know, I mean, I despite any evidence to the contrary that someone would like to believe exists, I do not go to these movies hoping to hate them. I don't want to spend an hour and a half or 2 hours being tortured by a movie I can't stand. I would love to find out that this was a comedy classic.
Yeah, you do. So then you can...
Well, then you ought to be happy.
Try and make me feel guilty.
Well, of course. But that's only so I can make you feel guilty.
Yeah.
That's my lot in life.
This is true.
The thing is that you appear to be impervious to feeling guilty, so I know.
Only when I just got out of Step Up 3D and you're fretting about, oh, Will Ferrell. Poor Ken. And I guess we're done. Have you...
I've had enough.
Yes. Well, I can tell.
Have you had enough?
No, I can go on for hours.
Well, that's probably...
got all kinds of things to talk about today.
Oh, okay.
But we'll stop. We don't... Nobody cares.
Oh.
So,
well.
Anyway.
This could have gotten interesting.
No,
it could have. No, it wouldn't. Okay.
But I'm Justin Souther.
Yeah, you are. Mm-hmm. And I'm Ken Hankey.
You are.
Good. I would like to have that confirmed every so often.
You might not want to. I don't know.
Well, I would still like to know. You know, okay. Even if it's grim.
Okay. Sounds good.
And we are...
our powers combined are elitist bastards.
The combination of the two of us does indeed result in elitist bastards.
We're like the Wonder Twins.
It's true. People look at us and they wonder. Yes.
Nevertheless. We're elitist bastards.
And we come to you through the courtesy of that great periodical, The Mountain Express.
Mm-hmm.
And we are... produced, cohered, and otherwise made into something...
Gently massaged.
Well, he hasn't gently massaged me. Is there something going on I'm missing? by Mr. Mucilage himself, the illustrious, the illuminated Steve Schanefeld, who hates Robert Altman. He's making rude gestures yet again, so I think it's time for us to go.
Well, I think... Well, we won't be here next week. It'll just be Steve complaining about Robert Altman.